Hello, and you are very welcome to Adapt Radio. My name is Dr. Claire O'Connell, and today we're talking about AI and sign language.
From the Adapt Centre at Trinity College, this is Adapt Radio, presenting groundbreaking innovations one conversation at a time.
We live in an uber digital world, and being able to access online information is an important part of life. So it follows that digital information should be accessible for all. But what do you do if you are deaf or hard of hearing and online information is not available through sign language? We are joined today by experts who have been involved with a fabulous pan-European project called SignOn, which has been looking at this very issue. Dr. Dimitar Shteryanov, an expert in machine translation and natural language processing from Tilburg University, and Davy van Landuut from the European Union of the Deaf. You are both very welcome to the programme, and a warm welcome also to our interpreter, Romy O'Callaghan. Dimitar, you and Professor Andy Way from Dublin City University led the SignOn project, which ran until the end of last year. And for anyone who is not familiar with the project, can you tell us why there was a need to develop better technology for sign language translation?
So, yeah, we worked on a project that came from actually a communication gap. And that communication gap between hearing and deaf people, while it is being filled up as much as possible with interpreting services, there is the need to actually connect people on a different level, or to provide additional services, additional technology that will allow people to actually talk to each other and communicate with each other outside of the current existing tools for interpreting and translation. And so we thought of using or building on top of what has been done in the past on spoken machine translation, and use the experience that we have from that, and create tools and technology for sign language machine translation. Well, for machine translation for sign languages, that will allow us to later establish a communication protocol between, or communication medium between deaf and hearing people, but also will allow the translation through this technology that has already been there for spoken languages, the translation between spoken between sign languages, between different sign languages as well, seamlessly. So that's how kind of we thought of it from the beginning. Let's start and try to build technology from that perspective. Of course, then there are a lot of other things that we had to take into account, which relate to privacy, ethics, cultural aspects, social, societal aspects, and so on. That's the kind of the beginning of the project.
And Davy, maybe you could tell us more about the challenges that are faced by people in the deaf and hard of hearing community when they are accessing information online and there is no sign language available.
Sure, I can absolutely speak to that. When talking about the deaf community, it's a bit of a unique scenario because we are part of two different groupings. One is the disability community because we cannot hear, but also we are part of a linguistic and cultural minority as we have our own language, our own sign languages. Many people do believe that national sign languages are an aid or a communication tool rather than a fully fledged language with its own grammar and its own syntax, which it is. Given that it is a real language, these are two worlds that we're often working between because we're often seen as disabled first and then minority language second. And with that in mind, people often assume that the spoken language corresponds directly to the sign language, even though they're two very distinct languages in their own right. As a deaf person with my own lived experience, sign language is my natural form of expression. It is my first language. Written language, I would consider my second or third language. And so that is a medium I'm less comfortable communicating in because there's much more mental processing that needs to be done to communicate in a second language. And I think that's not an experience I have in isolation. That's an experience many deaf people have. And when we put that into consideration with the hearing world and how we're expected to communicate with the hearing world and how information is predominantly in written formats, particularly in digital spaces, it's a lot to consider. What I want to access is information in my own language. I think in terms of society, we have to remember that it's very audio dependent. Everything is based on sound. Think of the TV, radio, emergency announcements on a train station or at an airport, often audio tannoy based information. It's very rarely considered to put it in a visual medium. And that's an issue for deaf community members and not only sign language users, but hard of hearing or people with reduced hearing. And what we want is equal footing with our hearing peers in the world that we can get by the same as anyone else.
So can I ask you what kind of technology the Sign-On project developed to help address these issues?
So as I said, we started with the idea of let's take what is there for spoken languages and try to build on top of that. Okay. However, we saw that, of course, that from the beginning, that was not feasible because we're dealing actually with different modalities. In spoken machine translation, in text-to-text, we deal with text, which is just a linear sequence of words or tokens, right? While in sign language, we have so many other dimensions. Starting from the fact that it is recorded in a video format, when we have recordings, or conveyed in a visual medium, when we have face-to-face communication in sign language, to how it is going to be produced, right? So again, text-to-text, just you have text, it starts from text, it ends up being text again. While in sign language, you have to have a 3D visual representation of the language, which it's not that simple. And so basically, spoken machine translation wouldn't work exactly as for sign language. So we had to build on top and do something smarter, something more innovative. And the fact that also in Sign-On, we were dealing with many, many languages, so spoken and sign languages, that added additional challenge of how do we actually provide a translation service for that many modalities and languages between each other? And so what we did is like we said, okay, we're going to divide and conquer, let's say. We have a recognition system which will recognize sign language, which will take videos or recordings of people from the application and will process these recordings from sign language, convert them into some sort of discrete tokens, discrete sequences of words. I can talk about the fact that this is not the best option, but that's something that that we can discuss later. But okay, so from the video, we create some sort of a sequential representation of the language that is passed through a large model, large language model. Many of you know about ChatGPT nowadays, right? And Llama for other things and so on. Yeah, there is this hype currently with large language models, but at the end of the day, we also use something like this in our Sign-On. Basically, inside of all this big thing that we created, there is a large language model that does the translation between different languages and different modalities. So we have recognition and synthesis which plug on the side of this interlingua, as we call it. And so building on top of this is how we actually built our technology to actually address the translation challenges or the technological challenges for automatic translation from sign to sign or sign to spoken and spoken to sign language. Now on the other side, so we have recognition, we have translation, and then we have synthesis. Now the synthesis, there is a whole big discussion there as well about the challenges and the needs. But at the end of the day, what we did is we built a 3D virtual character, an avatar as people refer to it, which is again built on sequential tokens. So we provide sequential information that feeds this avatar, and then the avatar represents the sign language, signs.
It sounds really complex. And you mentioned there that you were working not only across the different modalities, but also with lots of different sign languages as well. Spanish sign language, English, Irish, Dutch. I mean, it's incredible that you brought everything together when there was so much complexity. And I know a big part of the sign-on project has been interdisciplinarity. So working with lots of experts with different backgrounds, including many people with lived experience. Davi, maybe you could talk to us about how that happened or how you made that happen, co-creating with so many different people.
I think it's important to give a bit of a background on this, because when it comes to co-creation, there's a lot of conversation. There's a lot of previous projects that have had interests of the deaf community to heart. Technology and solving issues for deaf community is not new as an idea. People have been trying to innovate on this forever. However, what often happens is that a hearing individual or team who have no understanding of sign language, deaf culture, deaf communities, honestly, strangers to us who aren't familiar with it being an actual language, with the needs that we as a community need, they build something. There are many examples of things that have been developed that are seen to be cutting edge, such as sign language gloves or something to that effect that can recognize finger spelling. However, a simple issue. Finger spelling is not the only way we communicate in sign language, which is to spell words on the hand. That is a single grammatical feature of the language that has so much more encapsulated within it. So often many projects are effectively wasting funds because they're creating and asking questions of the community later. If they had asked on the first day of creating these sign language gloves and actually worked with deaf community members, what they would have seen was it never was going to work to fruition. And this is what we see time and time again. And there's a lot of frustration from the deaf world that they're seeing these hearing people coming to help, save, be their like knight in shining armor, which is not what we're looking for. And that's a big mental an attitudinal barrier that we have been facing for years. Now, we are seeing a slow shift for sure. With sign-on, this project has definitely recognized the need to have co-creation from the beginning, that deaf professionals need to be a part of this co-creation and this consortium, and that they basically need to guide and lead the rest of the experts to develop a tool that will benefit the community as a whole. My organization that I work for, the European Union of the Deaf, we didn't come into this with only our perspective. We did extensive research and outreach to deaf community members from European countries to ask, what do you want as a grassroots deaf end user? What would you like to see? We collated a lot of research, did a lot of interviews and focus groups, and worked with individuals like Dimitar, our technical experts who don't ask me how synthesis works. This is not my area of expertise, but what I could bring was the end user perspective, so that if we are engaged and we would work with the technical partners and have this constant cycle of feedback between the technical partners and ourselves as representatives of the end user community. And then we could see, okay, what's actually possible in terms of sign language translation and what will ensure the deaf community will take this technology up, rather than being left behind. There is still this hesitancy and fear around sign language translation from deaf community members, because often the decision makers, like governmental parties, they want technical solutions for speed or financial gain. What the deaf community want, absolutely, are technological solutions, but not as only solution, as part of options that could ensure another way of communicating. And then you can understand why there's hesitancy about the decision makers, such as government saying, yeah, cheap solution, let's run with this. And then all other access means being cut or diminished. This is a cheap and fast solution, let's run with it. You can understand why that fear and hesitancy is prevalent in the community when it comes to technology. And that fear is something we need to balance, and we need to take into consideration with ethics. When we're talking about human access to the world, we have been taking this into consideration with sign-on. We want to ensure that we're not only focusing on technical solutions that will be all, save all, make the world a better place, but will actually be an option that people will want to use. You know, you don't want technology to be built for no reason and waste resources.
So it's an incredibly complex project that involves lots of different communities and people with different backgrounds working together. I'd love to hear more about the mindset and the practical steps that have enabled Sign-On to do this as a project. What are your thoughts?
So, as David said, we did a lot of efforts to work together with the deaf community. But it's not only about working with the deaf community to have things moving in the right direction. We internally, we had to have a nice collaboration with an interdisciplinary team, intercultural team, and then that required to be open with each other. That's kind of the main thing. To understand each other, to talk to each other in the same language, basically. Because we had experts from various institutes with various backgrounds working on different things in a different way based on their experience and their methodology and so on. We had also people that have completely different cultural backgrounds coming from all over Europe. And we had to work together. And to do that, again, the most important thing, what we practiced is to be as open as possible and communicate with each other as much as possible and try to understand each other. We had a very nice initiative there where we would have seminars where somebody from the consortium will present their work and how they're working. And that was actually very nice, so that when you sit in front of the screen and you see the other person or in front of the presentation, basically, you go into the details, or this person goes into the details, and you understand how they are working. Well, to a certain extent, of course. We had technical topics, we had ethical topics, we had linguistic topics. And so for the whole consortium, it was good to actually see, even if we can't grasp all the tiny details, to see how people are working. We had regular meetings and so on, and in-person and online meetings as well, with different groups, with the whole consortium and like this, that actually we can establish the right communication protocols. And I think that that's the most important thing.
And Davi, what are your thoughts on that, the steps to bringing communities together?
I think Dimitar's phrased it beautifully. Communication and openness are the key components of all of this. And when it comes to co-creation, they're the foundation. We also have to remember, when we're talking about co-creation as a term, it basically means to work together. And when we're talking about working together, it can sometimes be taken tokenistically, that someone is at the table, therefore they are a part of co-creation. And it's very easy to have situations where a single deaf person is included, quote unquote, as part of co-creation, but are not asked at the table what they think. And that can sometimes happen. Well, you know, we've got this project, it's unsuccessful, we've had a deaf person in it, therefore we've done the right thing. But that is not co-creation. Co-creation is led by end users to guide where tech needs to go, what ethical considerations need to be taken into perspective. And particularly as research is a hearing dominant space, this openness and communication with end users is vital on any topic, whether it's this or others. Like, this is coming from our lived experience. These are coming from our barriers that we face. Therefore, I am an expert on this situation based on my lived experiences. I know the communication barriers that I face that society isn't even aware of. So I know what I want to use and what I don't want to use technologically to make these barriers disappear as much as possible. So as Dimitar highlighted, openness and active listening to each other was so important. It was empathetic conversations and seeing what was possible on all sides, not demanding too much from our side, but also having realistic expectations of what technical experts are able to do. As Dimitar is our technical expert here, I'll never be able to say, well, you know, Dimitar, we need this, this, and this, like magical. That's not something we could do. He's the expert who can tell me, well, I respect where you're coming from, but our limitations are here. And having this open conversation and negotiation across our fields and our worlds is so important, but that can only happen when experts come together with co-creation in mind, with openness and communication. And again, this comes back to attitudes and active listening, recognizing that transparency and communication are vital. It's the best way to ensure that co-creation actually happens. And that's one sensitive topic, because people say co-creation and sometimes it's not actually co-creation. It can also be sensitive because people don't want to be criticized, and things aren't meant or intended as criticisms. So you have to balance how you have that open communication very carefully. But again, as Dimitar has mentioned, open communication and having that openness will mean active listening happens, and then it'll all be fine.
And if I may add something, David, you remember when we had a meeting where one expert there said, yeah, but you should follow, build an avatar that has very good quality and so on. And then we said, yes, but that's not what people asked us to do. When we talked to the potential users, they said, well, we want the customization, we want the background to be so and so, so that they can see the avatar. And the expert was really like, no, but that's not what you should do. And we said, well, at the end of the day, it's not your decision. It's not your decision that you say what we have to actually build, when actually the user says, well, I need that and not the other thing, right? And so in situations like this, technical people, we can be like, okay, I'm not going to listen to the user. I'm going to build my technology the way that I want to build it, right? Because I know. And then you do something and then nobody uses it, even if it's the most beautiful 3D figure there. So listening to what people want guides the development of such a project. And as David said, yeah, I know about machine translation, but he and the other people that worked in the European Union of the Deaf and in VGTC, they know about the deaf community and what users may need. And only working together, we can actually do something that is usable, because otherwise it'd be like yet another project that stays on the shelf somewhere.
And so can I ask you, where is the technology at now? If I were to use it, how would I engage with it? What would it look like?
So the technology, according to the technological readiness levels of the European Union, of the European Commission, is at TRL 6. So basically, it has been tested in internal closed environment. It has shown to have potential. However, we are not there yet. Now, I have to say, we have an application. We have actually two applications. We have all the models that are built. We have the whole infrastructure, the whole framework. Everything is ready. But the models have not reached the quality that we actually wanted from the beginning. Now, there are reasons. We can talk about this in a bit. To answer your question directly, if you want to use this today, you can, but to a certain limited extent. When it comes to spoken language, yes, there is translation. Of course, that's been kind of built and established in various other applications. And so we have it as well in ours. When it comes to sign language, we can do recognition. We can do synthesis, but with a limited support. That links mainly, and kind of that may open the door to another conversation, that leads mainly to the challenge of data availability and data quality that we have to train AI models, right? I hope that answers the question, but indeed, we are at TRL6 where the technology exists, but provides the performance is limited.
And is this kind of bottleneck where you have the technology, but you need to develop it further for use in the real world? Is this typical for this kind of technology? What kind of challenges do people typically face in this field?
Well, data is the main problem in this situation. It's not only about the availability of the data, right? There have been recordings of sign language, because sign language has been studied as a spoken language as well over the years. But sign language is much more difficult the sign language data, sorry, is much more complex to work with, not only from a technical perspective, but also from privacy and ethical perspective, right? Because there are videos of people which need to be processed, right? And that's, there is a difficulty there. Now, when it comes to our technology, the more data we have, the better models we'll build. We have built our pipelines, our software in such a way that if you have data that is ready to be used, you can plug it directly into the model to train the model, and it will train and update the model straight away. And so we started with knowing that at the end of the day, we probably will not have enough data to build amazing models. So we actually built our software in such a way that you can actually plug more data. We have even developed an application for collecting, for recording data and for collecting more data. However, as I said, data comes with a lot of, or sign language data comes with a lot of challenges. Collecting, processing, anonymizing, or putting a privacy label somewhere there. But also the data that is there at the moment that we can actually take and use is not made for machine learning, for machine translation. It's been collected under different projects with different perspectives in mind, different quality of cameras from different angles, and so on and so on. So there are a lot of challenges, and we have identified this as one of the main bottlenecks, and we are going to continue working to resolve or somehow limit the impact of this issue.
It seems to me that you have made huge progress despite the difficulties, and indeed the sign-on project has been very well received by the research community. You have won lots of awards, including, and let me get this right, the Societal Impact Award at the Analytical Institute AI and Analytic Awards, the Most Innovative Transformation Award at Digital Transformation Awards, and the Engaged Research Award from Science Foundation Ireland in 2023. And as it happens, I was emceeing the event when Sign-On won that Science Foundation Ireland Award. And it was really lovely to see the team get that recognition. How has the technology and the project been received more generally among potential end users and wider audiences?
In terms of the real results of the project, the tangible results, as Dimitar mentioned, they are limited. And with that in mind, it can't be used in the real world as of yet. However, the deaf community that we've engaged with, which has been quite extensive, because they've been involved with the project from the beginning, as EUD has, again, a part of this co-creation process, they're more open-minded to technological solutions in a way that we hadn't seen before. Although the quality isn't there for the sign-on project as of yet, in terms of communication, we've always been incredibly transparent, not only as part of the consortium, but when working with end users and those who we'd like to engage with. Now, Dimitar's very beautifully mentioned the data issue. We've had that conversation with many members of deaf communities, and it was almost an assurance to them that they recognized it's not that this is being dropped. It's not that this isn't important. They know it's important. They also recognize, wait, you're considering our privacy, you're considering quality of data, and there's much more trust being built with them as an end user. And I think that is a foundation can't be minimized, because that collaboration hasn't been there before. If there was no transparent, open communication, and there was just an end result shown that looks limited, it would have been shunned without consideration. There wouldn't have been any further thought on it. It would just be like, oh God, another hearing person making another technical solution without us. That doesn't actually help us at all. In this, although a limited end result, because we've been involved from the beginning, and when I say we, I mean in the broadest sense, the deaf community, we are seeing that this is a step in the right direction. We are seeing that deaf people are working as part of this co-creative process, and that's building trust. And that can't be undervalued. From that perspective, that's an incredible success for this project. In terms of use of money and real conversation happening with real end users, I think phenomenal. Such a big result. Technological bottleneck, yes, that's something we're working on, particularly when it comes to data constraints. but it's been hugely successful in terms of transparent communication with end users.
Well, that is brilliant because it's been such a complex project. I think 17 partners across Europe and coordinated by Professor Andy Way in Dublin City University. And it sounds like that everything has come together in a very positive way. So what's next for Sign-On? What directions will it go in now?
So the future directions, yes. As David said, with Sign-On, what we did is we built trust within the deaf community that together we are going to continue working. Now, trust is very difficult to build, very easy to break. So what we want to do is to continue working together with the deaf communities and to further continue on this concept of co-creation. Now, as David said, co-creation is sometimes difficult to grasp, difficult to understand, difficult to implement in practice. We want to keep on working that direction to make it easier, right? To make it more defined, more methodological, more clear how to actually work with the end users and with all these differences that we have as from expertise background and from cultural backgrounds and so on, so that we can actually know how to work together better. So that's one direction that I would like to continue. And we already have several things lined up, including, so since October 2023, there is a PhD student that is working under my supervision together with also under the supervision of Mirella De Sisto, who is also part of the Sign-On project. So together we're working with this person who is from the deaf community from Netherlands, and she's working on this specific topic, co-creation, collaboration, working towards machine translation for sign language with the community. Recently, we got also funding to work on data. So we got awarded a project here in the Netherlands from the university to do some pilot project where we're going to collect some data and see how actually, what are the requirements of machine learning algorithms towards data and how we can actually better collect data and how we can actually better use the data that we have. So we are going in these directions, and that's from my side only. And I know that a lot of the partners from Sign-On have also individually and in collaboration with others are working on different projects, different spin-offs and the continuation of what they have started. Not to mention the synthesis, which turned into a very interesting platform that has been used well within different other projects and by different organizations and institutes. The recognition, so from a technical perspective, I'm talking, the recognition has been developed, and there is another project that is going on with this technology that we developed, people trying to evolve this technology on the translation side as well.
And Davey, what are your thoughts about the future, the end of the Sign-On project? How do you see things developing now?
Well, the European Union of the Deaf is a unique organization in that we are not an academic house. We are a political activism NGO. So with that in mind, we're going to take what we've learned from the project with what our end users, what our members want and need, and we will advocate and push for that with political stakeholders at a European and national level. We're more thinking a societal impact and how, because AI is here to stay, right? And there's a lot of implications for that in a whole host of domains. And we want to ensure that in all domains, we're taken into consideration. So when we're lobbying, we want to make sure that end users like the governments are listening to us and not going off on what they think is best for us. So we're learning from this project, the research it has given us, the empowerment it's given us to show that it's not only just for machine translation for sign language users that co-creation is important. Sign-On and machine translation as a project has been incredibly beneficial, and we've been involved and focused on deaf community and how co-creation can add to this. But this is a model that can be taken to any project on a similar topic or a completely different topic. how we can think about societal access, how we can think about the barriers. There's many ways we can draw from this as a project. Machine translation is only one niche of what we're working on as a deaf-led organization fighting for sign language rights across Europe. So we'll always be taking the opportunity to look at new projects as they come up and see our position in society and how we can better ourselves and lobby for that with political institutions.
Well, congratulations to you and all the sign-on team for such an innovative project that has built trust, technology, momentum, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about what happens in this area in the future. But in the meantime, Demeter, Davy, Romy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And if you would like to find out more about the Sign-On project and ADAPT's research in this area, you can find lots of information in the show notes and at www.adaptcentre.ie. For now, that's it for our podcast this time around. Until next time, slán, and thanks for listening.
The ADAPT Radio podcast is brought to you by the ADAPT Centre at Trinity College Dublin. Find out more about their extensive research work at adaptcentre.ie. Join us next time to hear about more groundbreaking innovations. To get new episodes automatically, just click the follow button on your player right now. The ADAPT Radio podcast is produced by dustpod.io, with episodes monthly on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.